Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. About a minute past the hour on this, the 27th day of January, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's also, coincidentally, where you go if you would like to click on the chat room tab and jump into The Horn chat room. It's quick and easy, free as a bird. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in where you will be. Where you will be met by Don from Central PA, Jug of Punch, Labor Man, Steve from Georgistan, and VT Blom. And here in a minute or so, by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who may be, as far as I don't know, he may be folding space even as we speak because he's a third stage guild navigator. And I don't know. I just don't know. But he'll be along presently because, among other things, it is Friday on the Front Porch on The Horn. And, of course, Friday on the Front Porch is that entirely unique thing that happens here at The Horn every, and that's why we call it Friday on the Front Porch, every Friday when we pull together the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable of folks from all over and engage in a discussion of whatever is on people's minds on any given Friday, and this Friday is no different. And so if you've never done that before, it's easy to do. You get on Skype, you send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and he will then show you the breadcrumb trail with which you will access the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. Okie doke. And it's almost always a rousing and invigorating conversation. So, we've got that taken care of. Good. And we'll be firing up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in about 57 minutes or so. Now, this is a listener-supported broadcast. No ads. No herbal pills to make anything grow or become tumescent. No vacuum cleaners picking up bowling balls and dropping them on Bose Wave radios, which then fall to the floor from lumber liquidators inside your General Steel building. None of that. No buy gold now. Sorry. That's one of the things that makes us unlike ever so much other radio. This is not a big profit. This is not a profit-seeking enterprise. It is an attempt to keep a 12-year-old conversation going and head toward, well, I mean, we're in it now. We're in year 13 of The Horn. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what it's all about. And program note, as I've been saying, I'll be gone all next week. I'm going to Washington, D.C. next week because the bill that that I've worked on and my other colleagues have joined in working on together for 5 years now, which is in its own right hard to believe, hard to imagine, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act will be reintroduced in the Congress, in the House of Representatives, next week. In fact, there's this there's a little term of, or there's a thing that is done. An email goes out. It's called a dear colleague letter. And a dear colleague letter has already gone out on the House side asking asking members to co-sponsor the bill. And so consequently, I can suggest to you, I can ask you this evening to please begin reaching out to your members of Congress, members of the House, and say something like, it has come to my attention that you have received a dear colleague letter asking you to sign on as a co-sponsor of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency ACHE Act. Please know that I am wholly in support of the ACHE Act, and, you know, some language about how you very badly want your member of Congress to sign on. And with any luck at all, the bill will drop with a whole bunch of signatures on it. It will, as has been the case every year but one, the first year, it will be introduced by Representative John Yarmuth of Kentucky, a very good man, in conjunction with proud daughter of the hills and hollers of Appalachia in eastern Kentucky, Representative Louise Slaughter of New York, and hopefully many, many more. And that's the part, that's why we're going to D.C., is to work on the many, many more part. We will also be working on trying to get it introduced in the Senate. Because if we're not going to fight back now, we're never going to fight back. And Coal River Mountain Watch and my colleagues and I have been fighting back for a very long time. And this is your opportunity to help us in doing that. Okay? So there you have it. Find your Congress. Find your Congress contact, and try to do some outreach. And maybe if you're on Facebook or Twitter, start spreading the word that way. And hopefully, we will see significant traction as the bill goes forward. This is not to say that I don't realize what the nature of the struggle is. But the fact of the matter is, if we are ever to be back in power, we must have things ready to go. And this is part of that. It's also pushback, because next week, you may not know this, but next week the Republican House has its sights set on ditching, and no pun intended, ditching the stream protection rule promulgated in the last days of the Obama administration. What is the stream protection rule? Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's get that out of the way. Where's Tim when I need him to remind me? The stream protection rule was a response to the fact that the coal industry in Appalachia, in particular the mountaintop removal coal industry in Appalachia, has buried over 2,000 miles of streams. Hell, late into end, that's across the biggest part of the width of the United States, isn't it? That's a bunch of miles. The mountains that have been destroyed and the mountain communities tucked in them by mountaintop removal are an amount of land that is equivalent to the entire state of Delaware. I know, Delaware's a small state, but that's a whole lot of moonscape, isn't it? And so the Republicans in Congress are going to try to undo the stream protection rule so that the coal industry can be great again and can get back to the business of burying streams, poisoning water, and destroying the lives of people who live in Appalachia. And hey, of people who live downstream from Appalachia. Hint, everybody. So that's what we're going to work on. And my colleagues and I and those of us in Appalachia who struggle for justice would sincerely appreciate you joining the struggle. Glenn writes in and says, Louise Slaughter is my congresswoman. I find her to be wonderful. She is wonderful, and she is a delight to get to know. She is a genuine person. She is for real. She's not what you imagine when you imagine the typical member of Congress. She is real all the way down to the ground. And the same applies to Mr. Yarmouth. They're very special people and very good and decent people. And so that's the purpose of what we're doing next week. Now, as I mentioned fundraising a minute ago, we're trying to raise, and we're very close, we're trying to raise 2 weeks' worth of horn fundraising in 1 week, because I'll be gone all next week. There will be no broadcasts. I'll be updating on Facebook and Twitter, but there will be no broadcasts. And as a consequence of that, there will be no fundraising, which would put us in a big, bad, nasty hole coming back. And it's easier to stay above ground than it is to get out once you're, you know, down there. Lassie, it's me, Timmy, down the well. Yeah, it's a lot easier than having to do that. So here's where we stand. Thank you to Rico. And thank you to Gary, as well as to our subscribers. We don't have a lot of subscribers this time of the month. We've got a few, and they are vitally important to our efforts. And so it is that Arnold in PA and Karen in California, in conjunction with Rico and Gary, have gotten us, it would have been $562, and they got it down to $482. No, it was $567, and it's down to $482, and that's what we've got for this evening, $582. Meanwhile, a note has arrived from Billable Rick, who is putting up what he calls the Two Tickets to Paradise Challenge. Just got a note from Billable Rick saying, since I'm going to be seeing Eddie Money in concert tonight, I thought it would be fitting to put in a Two Tickets to Paradise Challenge. For the first two people who can contribute $20 each tonight, I'll buy them a ticket, it's in quotes, for $20 each, for a total contribution to the program of $40. So cool. You kick in $20. Rick doubles your money for the next for two people, and that will take us down to 402 to go. You know how it goes with the ciphering. Okay, and Rick closes saying, "Give them hell in D.C. next week. Catch you on the front porch here in a little bit," because Rick is 3 hours behind me here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, so he'll be able to come in and do the front porch thing, and then go off to see Eddie Money. Cool. Thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you very, very much. Yeah, Glenn knows. Glenn up in New York knows what we're dealing with down here in Appalachia. He says, Bob, I remember working in Appalachia as a surface mine reclamation specialist, and back then we tried, but the Democrats and Republicans would pretty much turn their heads. And it is an uphill struggle. And one of the reasons we've had a difficult time getting the bill introduced in the Senate is because you sit down in a meeting and inevitably you're talking to a Democratic member of the Senate and they say something like, well, what does Senator Manchin think? And you can't just be a jerk and say, really? You're still under the impression that Joe Manchin thinks? You can't do that. And because he's got a D after his name, and they think that that means something to him, they care about what he thinks. And I don't know. Maybe there's been a little bit of a learning curve. Thank you very kindly. I just realized I had neglected to take into account Jug of Punch, Thomas. So we are actually at $467 to go. $467. So thank you for the reminder, Jug of Punch. But that's the kind of stuff we're up against. But we're going to be continuing the work. Because when you get right down to it, in terms of pushing back against the predatory nature of the Republican Party in the Congress and their fawning support for a poisonous industry that, well, we call it poisonous because it poisons other human beings, like mountaintop removal, we don't have much. And by not have much, I mean the only thing we have is the AIC Act. And the AIC Act is a lot, and the AIC Act is definitely something. But there's no anti-fracking bills in the Congress. There's no precautionary principle bills in the Congress except the AIC Act. And so we go forward with probably the single most important, I know people like to, we consider it a human rights bill, but others like to consider it an environmental bill. And so we go forward with the single most important environmental bill in the country today. Because you see, the science that has developed around mountaintop removal and the fact that it poisons people has a lot to do with what happens when you blast in layers of sandstone. And for instance, for my friends in Wisconsin and Iowa and Minnesota who are subjected to constant blasting for the frack sand industry, well, the same health effects will be showing up in another 5, 6, 7 years out in places like New Auburn, Wisconsin. So that speaks to the importance of the AIC Act. I think you mean Arch, Glenn. I remember when they were trying to get this knucklehead back into office. Remember the song Arch Moore, It's Good to Have You Back? Oh, yeah. And then then it was Arch Moore, We're Glad to See You Headed to Prison. Right. So that's what's going on next week. And, I hope we can knock out fundraising over the course of the evening. And I hope we can, I'll miss you guys. I presume it's a sentiment that runs both ways, but I will. Just to tell you a little bit, just a little bit of fun. I got a birthday coming up, and I went down to the post office today. And at the post office, because I'd gotten a notice there was a package. And looking at the outside of the package, it had a notation on it. The package itself came from Zeppo Graphics. And it had a notation in the corner that said, eliminate moles, mice, and morans. Handy kit shows you how. Details inside. Well, there was no I guess maybe the Postal Service confiscated the Moran eradication kit. But there was something else inside. Something magnificent. Something, and I think this is the appropriate word to use under the circumstances, wunderbar. There were a pair of artisanally made, classic, smoky, wonderful, spicy Hungarian sausage rings. Yes. Courtesy of Reverbo and the wonderful, wonderful Sonia. And so you don't just tie into these things. They are a Zen exercise in patience. You have to hang them. This is the food porn portion of the program, in case anyone was wondering. You have to hang them up and let them air dry for about a week. And with the weather being what it is, the studio back here is the perfect place to do that. And so they are currently, in fact, I just put them on the hook, hanging up and waiting. And when I get back from Washington, D.C., we're going to get out the stash of wonderful German mustard and tie into these suckers. Damn, they're good. A little bit fiery, smoky, zesty. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, thanks again. Thank you again very kindly. Note coming in from Ron in the, we'll default to frigid north. Evening, y'all. The fireplace is working well. The wine is very enjoyable, and the snow is blowing around outside the big window in my man cave. That is the Ron in the far frozen north color weather window. Yes, although it becomes kind of monochrome this time of year, doesn't it? You want to know what's great about Friday? It means I can sleep in tomorrow and wake up when I damned well please. I had a nap this afternoon just to warm up for the hopefully long night's sleep. Ron also notes, people love other people who tilt at windmills even when everyone knows the odds are against them. Well, speaking of, there's that song, and I, for some reason or another, I always hear it in Jim Nabor's voice. Sergeant Carter, I can't sing. Pyle, you've got to sing! And the next thing you know, he's standing there singing, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. This is my quest. And that's all the singing I'm going to be doing this evening. Because I think fundraising probably just went straight to hell. But if you don't buy the ticket, you can't take the ride. If you don't take the chance, you never run the risk of success. And so you just bite off little pieces at a time. There's only one way to eat an elephant. Last night I ate an elephant in my pajamas. What an elephant was doing in my pajamas, I'll never know. Ah, Groucho Marx. So that's just some of the stuff that's rambling around in my mind. But there's a lot of stuff to get into this evening. And there's momentous stuff. The visit from the Brexit Prime Minister, Theresa May, with the Kumquat Kaiser. Yeah. And apparently, I guess, the Clementine Caligula at some point will be traveling to the UK to meet with the Queen. I'm sure that'll be embarrassing. And then there's the fact that he's getting relentlessly trolled by the former president of Mexico. Dear God. I guess they invited him on, what, Morning Joe? And he completely eviscerated the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Hey, I'm proud of those two references. Did you catch those? Those are brand new, and those are mine. Nobody else's. The Kumquat Kaiser. And because, you know, Kumquat is probably one of the funniest words in the English language. All you do is you say Kumquat to somebody and they smile. Or sometimes they giggle or grin. So that just came to me today, the Kumquat Kaiser. And that led in a natural progression. You know, the little, they're called cuties now, I guess. But they're little tangerine-like thing. They're called clementines. Yeah, the Clementine Caligula. The Tangerine Tiberius. They just write themselves after a while. So feel free to use them. I found out earlier today, I wrote something a week or so ago referring to Trump as an adipose lump of insecurity. And somewhere out there, there's a refrigerator with a sticky note on it that just has in quotes, adipose lump of insecurity, because it tickled someone's fancy. Yeah. But those will go into heavy rotation, and you are frankly you're welcome to use those at your leisure, because we're going to need more and more stuff, more and more ways to refer to this little pissant. And Kumquat Kaiser, Clementine Caligula, Tangerine Tiberius, they all work. And you know me, I try to work in the classical realm. There's another one I came up with, used it last night, the Sallow Sulla. Now that may be a little bit obtuse, because everybody thinks that, you know, everybody can name a Caesar or two. But Sulla was dictator back around the beginning of the first century BCE, or, you know, well, no, and what, 20, 30 years into it, and killed a lot of people and was vindictive, and that worked, the Sallow Sulla. Mm-hmm. All right. Ooh, courtesy of Tracy. Another one. Oh, this is good. The Marmalade Menace. Yes, absolutely. The Marmalade Menace. Tracy adds, not to be outdone by Billable Rick, I'm going to throw the hat in the ring for a rent for rent challenge. Jen and I are going to see Rent tonight, so in honor of that, I'm offering a $50 challenge to help Bob pay the rent for this week and next. And, yeah, then, hey, Bob, what about the Marmalade Menace? That's exquisite. So now we've got $90 in challenges laying on the table that will double your money and knock $180 out of the fundraising goal for the evening. And $180 knocked off of $482 is a big, big deal. Well, okay, we're working on stuff here. We've got Marmalade Menace. And now, courtesy of Steve in New York, we have the Nectarine Nero. Oh, that's good, too. Is there a... Is there a... Hey, the peach Pol Pot. Mm-hmm. The Mango Mao. We're off and rolling. Thank you. Clarity noting colorful language, Clementine Caligula. The peach Pol Pot, the Mango Mao. The Marmalade Menace. Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for the reminder. Yeah, definitely for the Marmalade Menace, and that's for the Nectarine Nero. Peach Pol Pot. Come on, Kumquat Kaiser is good too, damn it. And remember, ridicule is a powerful, powerful tool to use against authority. You can find that statement right there in Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. Mm-hmm. But like I said, there's a considerable amount of stuff going on today and every day, and we've talked about how we're going to have a hard time keeping up. The theme in the chat room this evening, if you haven't popped in, is 7 days, 11 lies. Oh, it's the 7-11 presidency. How nice. That's good, too. Thanks, James. Commodus Kumquat. Moldy Muskmelon. Sylvia says she's just contacted three local representatives. Good. Thank you, Sylvia. Thank you so much. Jenny with a note said, I wanted to get a ticket to Paradise, but I'm having trouble with the PayPal. Is it anyone else or just me? It's probably not just you. We are having PayPal problems because of they're changing over security gizmos and whatever. And John Fox is working on that. In the meantime, if you just go to paypal.com and use bobkincaid@gmail.com, it'll get through just fine. That's a lot of people go the direct route anyway, and you just click on sending money to friends and family, and it saves some of the transfer fees as well. Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Steve. Steve notes, as Brother Usher Steve, I authorize a cowbell for Kumquat Kaiser. All right. Thank you. I try not to award myself cowbells. That's not without proper democratic action. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, I'm personally hoping that his administration will be referred to in history as the Genital Warts Administration, much in the way we call W's administration the Reign of Error. Well, you know, he probably does have herpagonosyphilades. One certainly would account for the spirochetes. Julius Squeezer. Did you just come up with that, James? Is that yours? Because if it is, yeah. Oh, we may break the cowbell this evening. Punky's working overtime too. His transcriptionist, old blood and guts Scott, just submitted the pouting potentate from the Sunshine State. Nice. Marty says, I think he's more Caligula than Nero. Which one was more prone to have sex with members of his own family? That'll be the determinant. Yeah. So, I mean, there was that thing he said about wanting to date his own daughter. Ew! Ah, thank you, Jenny. Thank you very kindly. So Jenny just jumped in on the two tickets to Paradise Challenge. One of the tickets has been taken. Angry Indian says Caligula. Oh, how nice. James said, Julia Squeezer is mine. And my first cowbell. Thanks. I know it's special, isn't it? Tracy's in rare form. Mendacious Mongoloid Mango. And Glenn has just claimed the second ticket to Paradise. Okay, I'm just going to ask this. I'm not trying to be offensive or anything. I didn't even know Eddie Money was still performing. I saw him back in his heyday. He was the opening act for Kansas at the Von Braun Civic Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, and that was a very long time ago. Let's see, 54, 44, that was 32 years ago. Oh, okay, a little clarification from Asa. I didn't mean Julius Squeezer, has genital warts. I meant he am one. Yeah, I know. That's true. I'd forgotten about that. Angry pointing out that Eddie Money is an ex-cop. Steve says, last one, I swear, Pumpkin Pontifex Maximus. Absolutely. So now we are down to $402 to go in fundraising for the evening because the two tickets to Paradise have been challenged, or have been picked up. And so that leaves the Tracy's Rent Challenge awaiting a response. But I keep saying, well, wait a minute. Luda says, the tiny-handed terror, little sleazy. Well, no, I see what you... Pan. No, there's a number of things that we could start with. But I admit sometimes my tastes run to the obscure and the absurd. And Dave Weigel writing at the Washington Post, House Science Committee Chairman, Americans should get news from Trump, not media. Just let that sink in for a minute. Now, who is the House Science Committee Chairman? Well, that is Lamar Smith of Texas, who is doing his best to bow a knee of fealty to Julia Squeezer. You know, if we were really up on our obscure Roman emperors, we maybe Grabber Galba, but I think Galba was, God, I think Galba was actually emperor for about 15 minutes. Nah, we'll let that one go. Lamar Smith is the idiot who several years back declared that carbon dioxide is good for you. Because, and he did this, I kid you not, somewhere back there in the archives, I think we've even got audio, he declared that carbon dioxide is good for you because it's what makes soda pop fizzy. No, really. I wish I was kidding. But I'm not. How do you deal with ignorance at that level? Well, I go back to ridicule. There's no way to treat that seriously. All you can do with a Lamar Alexander, Lamar Smith, all you can do with a Lamar Smith in that instance is laugh at him. He's from the 21st District of Texas, which takes in, if you can imagine, I mean, God bless America, it's a rock-solid 2 hours from San Antonio to Austin, isn't it? Well, Lamar represents parts of San Antonio, Austin, and Fredericksburg, Texas. And here him are.
Mr. Speaker, just think what the media would be saying about President Trump if he were a Democrat. He has tremendous energy. He campaigned for 18 months, puts in 15-hour days, and has the stamina of a bull elephant like Teddy Roosevelt. He is courageous, even fearless. Given the amount of hate directed his way, no doubt he constantly receives death threats. But that doesn't curtail his public appearances or seem to worry him in the least. He has conviction. He practices what he preaches. He doesn't waffle or waver, and he's obviously not deterred by media criticism. He is a great father. Anytime a son or daughter calls, he picks up the phone. He includes them in his activities. Clearly, he has a strong relationship with his children. He is off to a fast start. His cabinet consists of smart, experienced, and successful individuals. He already has taken steps to keep jobs in America, put unnecessary regulations on hold, and improve health care. Consumer confidence is at a 16-year high. No, the national liberal media won't print that or air it or post it. Better to get your news directly from the president. In fact, it might be the only way to get the unvarnished truth.
And all over the country, I can hear members of the Horn Family Community Congregation retching into buckets at the ludicrousness of that. He sounded like a fan writing letters to the Cisco Kid or something. Damn. Well, with that going as prologue, I wanted to offer up something because of the that Don from Central PA says that Congress critter should be invited to swim in the pH zero body of liquid. Could we lock Lamar in an airtight room and fill it with carbon dioxide? He would think that would be wonderful. Yeah, well, I think it was back when he said that it precipitated a little rant that got turned into a YouTube video once upon a time called Mars Needs Republicans. You know, they've got a CO2 atmosphere there. It's working out great for life on Mars. But with that fawning bit of what do they call it in Blazing Saddles? Authentic frontier gibberish. The following: How to Cover Donald Trump Fairly, a Style Guide. This again comes from Alexandra Petrie at the Washington Post. This style guide to covering Trump honestly and fairly is too late for me since I work for the Post, which has had its credentials revoked by the Trump campaign. This goes back to June 14th of this year, of last year. We haven't had June 14th this year. But it is more than applicable even as we speak. One, Donald Trump is never wrong. Donald Trump is infallible, like the Pope, but with more raw sexual charisma. If Donald Trump appears to be wrong in a story, either because of a statement or an action, or some combination of the two, it should be rewritten so that he is not wrong. A good baseline for what is fair and honest coverage is that fair and honest coverage depicts Donald Trump as the shining golden god he is, envied of men and beloved of women. Unfair, dishonest coverage does not depict Donald Trump this way. Two, style is as important as substance. A good post about Donald Trump includes at least one of the following words: huge, great, manly, terrific, incredible, fantastic, remarkable, big, bigly, immense, girthy, magisterial, gargantuan, tumescent. Ideally, this word would be in the headline. A bad post about Donald Trump includes the words or phrases puny, dangerous, Godwin's law, cocktail shrimp in a toupee. Dear God, wait a minute. Husk of dead skin and hyperbole. Garbage fart. What results if you accidentally leave Guy Fieri in a microwave? This is the Washington Post. Does Donald Trump contradict himself? Very well, he contradicts himself. Donald Trump is large. Donald Trump contains multitudes. Who among us, four, has not been in the position where what he means to say is something wise and temperate, and what actually comes out of his mouth is a garbage fart? Equipped with this knowledge, it is often best to take into account what Donald Trump should have said and to report that instead of what he actually did say. The great historian Thucydides used to do this, which is why Pericles' funeral oration is so lovely. Remember the transitive property of Trump. Whenever Donald Trump loves something, it loves him back. Donald Trump loves women, therefore women love Donald Trump. Donald Trump loves Hispanics, therefore Hispanics love Donald Trump. Any polls that obscure these truths should be disregarded. Six, Donald Trump's hair is real. Well, no, real is putting it too mildly. Donald Trump's hair is a fact that transcends reality or unreality, not to be questioned, merely to be admired, like the triune nature of God or the singular beauty and excellence of a Donald Trump building. Seven, two words, large hands. Eight, facts are often biased against Donald Trump and should be used sparingly in reporting, if at all. Think of them as a garnish, not an entree. Nine, Donald Trump's word suffices. Fact-checking is at best gauche and at worst treasonous. What is fact? Donald Trump speaks truth, which is bigger than fact. Donald Trump loves you. You love Donald Trump. 10. Donald Trump believes that criticism is healthy. As Noel Coward put it, Donald Trump can take any amount of criticism so long as it is unqualified praise. Some frequently asked questions on fair Trump coverage. Can I just print a transcript of what Donald Trump actually said? No! This is very mean and bad. What Donald Trump actually says is, of course, uniformly good and correct. But sometimes if you just write it out and give it to people to see, they will not think so. Therefore, this is to be avoided. What is a fair question? An example of a fair question is, Donald Trump, why are you so good at business? An example of an unfair or gotcha question is, why did Lincoln succeed? Can I describe what someone did at a Donald Trump rally? Yes, if that someone is Donald Trump, and what that someone did was be awesome without interruption. What if Donald Trump didn't answer my question? Not true. Donald Trump has given you the answer. Your question was not correct. This isn't hard. Just think of it like Jeopardy. In the statement issued by the Donald Trump campaign stating that it will stop credentialing Post reporters, the campaign said, Mr. Trump does not mind a bad story, but it has to be honest. What is a bad story that is honest about Mr. Trump would not mind? Answer, a story about Hillary Clinton.
Oh, Jesus, Hillary! Oh, my God! Goldman Sachs speeches! Son of a God! Oh! The devil!
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Okay. Hey, thanks, Sparky. Thanks for finding that. I think this does go back to Lamar Smith. Let's take a minute and check out Mars Needs Republicans. Maybe, hopefully, kinda, sorta.
Business, business.
CO2 can't possibly be a can't possibly be a,
it's wait a minute.
It's in your soda pop. It's in, remember? I mean, really, Pig Lickens have made that argument on the floor of the House of Representatives. Well, I have a solution.
Being as how I'm a firm believer in science, I say let's prove how good CO2 is for a human being. And I say we do it by reinvigorating the manned space exploration program. Mars does have an atmosphere. It most assuredly has an atmosphere. The only problem on Mars is that Mars has an atmosphere comprised of, wait for it, yes, CO2. It's just chock-a-block with CO2. There's lots of CO2 on Mars. Theoretically, if you could do something to keep water on Mars, and you could, you know, just take some springtime bedding plants, you know, some petunias and peonies and marigolds and stuff, and if you could get water to them, there's enough CO2 there that, yeah, you could plant, you know, you could just plant Mars, and the next thing you know, you got an oxygen atmosphere, right? But who needs oxygen when you have Republicans? I say that Barack Obama should reinvigorate the manned exploration, well, okay, Republican exploration of space. We need to send Republicans to Mars. It's the red planet, they're the red party, red state. I'm liking this more and more. And we won't even have to spend money on spacesuit gear for them, because they're Republicans and they know that CO2 is good for you, so they can just hop right out of the spaceship and say, Lafayette, we are here, and just get busy breathing that CO2 that's so damn good for them. I think we should build and send an entire fleet of transport ships filled with Republicans to go and populate Mars. Because they apparently have some sort of inbuilt, maybe inbred, special ability to breathe and extract the oxygen from CO2. Man, that's a great slogan. Mars needs Republicans. Wow, we're on to something here. Just start queuing them up to the spaceships. Yeah, yeah, there's no liberals there. You can set up a free market economy. You can have pure 100% guaranteed capitalism just as soon as you figure out how to breathe CO2, because it's good for you, CO2 is. Just ask Joe Barton and Michelle Bachmann. Oh, it's Joe Barton.
And they're going to be there, too. They're going to be your leaders. This is a beautiful thing. And I think it's something that all Americans can get behind. I think the Repiglicans would get behind it. They'd get to live on a planet where none of us filthy liberals were. I think this has tremendous potential. Mars needs Republicans.
And I still stand by my words. Absolutely. God, that was a long time ago. A long time ago indeed. So, no, it turns out it wasn't Lamar Smith, but Lamar Smith is just as dumb as Joe Barton. And Michelle Bachmann made the argument, too, which makes it even more precious. You guys are off and running. Kitty in Boston. Liberius Fraudius Zero.
Okay, yeah.
Sylvia, how about Ocarus Overlord or Apricot Asshole? That's one. And two, I don't know if we've ever had a double cowbell email before, but by God, Sylvia just got one.
Yeah, I know. Marty says, forget the rum, pass the rot gut. What do you qualify as rot gut? Old Panther, that's what. Scott and Punky point out, once we decide on the correct insulting honorific for Trump, we should get started on revising song lyrics. We can't let any positive artistry or truth slip through in that venue. With apologies to Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel, and the people bowed and prayed to the Cheeto God they made. Oh, well, now, that's two nights in a row with the beginnings of really, really meaningful song parodies. Steve, a member of the Fraternity of Steve, says, Lamar Smith sounds like a girl in love. Stamina of a bull elephant? Nah, maybe the bull, but never the stamina. He's looking pretty beat up for 70 anyway, considering the excellent health care. Spirakeets are hell. They really are. I still maintain that he has the spray on tan to cover up the rash that comes from that. Steve, another member of the Fraternity of Steve. Since 15-hour days, going back to Lamar Smith. Yeah, since when is tweeting at 3 a.m. considered working? Well, you try it. It's not hard. It's not easy being that crazy that early in the morning. And thanks very kindly to Mike. $20 in the mail. Give him hell in D.C. Mike in Connecticut. Thank you, Mike. So that means there's $30 remaining on the rent challenge, courtesy of Tracy, headed out to see Rent this evening. Maybe she'll, I don't know. I don't know if she'll be in the room or not. It's what, 3:56 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right now. And that means, I don't know if she's got to get on the 602 to go to the 496 to the 9 and 1678. I don't know. Wait, 1678. So that would be 8/39. Okay, with that, yeah, reducing. Yeah. 8/39. You know, we try to have a little fun on Friday on the front porch. Just in case you're wondering, as of this week, we've had a new outbreak of freedom here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. West Trump, Virginia. Trumpalacha. This time in the far northern Panhandle County of Marshall County, in which something that is still referred to by media as coal slurry, which is a euphemism for toxic waste, but they can't bring themselves to call it what it is, toxic waste. No, hell no. But they did use the word contaminated at WTOV Channel 9 NBC Fox. The leak contaminated Fish Creek and sent black water flowing into the Ohio River last Friday. A Department of Environmental Protection spokesperson said they have ordered Murray Energy to stop all activity, investigate, and propose a plan for improvement. Improvement. The only way to improve that is to stop doing it! Because, you know, accidents happen. Right? I read somewhere today that the spill up in Saskatchewan that we were talking about the other night, that I was talking with Ron about, something on the order of that can't be right. 50,000 gallons. And how many gallons does a gasoline tanker truck hold? Yeah, try to convert that into tanker trucks. But that was just this. And, you know, nobody's hardly up there. I mean, it just spilled over by a sacred native burial ground is all. I mean, they're dead. They're not going to mind. I mean, wouldn't it be terrible to wake up all dead and realize you were covered in crude oil? That great getting up morning is going to be a little bit messy for some folks. No, Murray Energy has been ordered to stop all activity, investigate, and propose a plan for improvement. Okay, we've investigated. Let's see, our plan for improvement is to try not to do this again for a couple of days. Can we start making money again? Bob Murray's not nice when he's not making money. Because Fish Creek Road in Marshall County reopened this past Monday, and cleanup at the site continues. The West Virginia DEP will follow up on the environmental impact, and the Marshall County Health Department's been reaching out to residents that have a private water well that may have been impacted. Yeah, they're reaching out. That doesn't say that they're providing free heavy metals testing or mitigation of the toxicity of people's access to life-giving water. Gary Broadbent, who is a spokescreep for Murray Energy, said Murray Energy experienced a seeping of material from the Connor Run impoundment. Seeping. Can we take a moment just to do a little practice of the art of word knowing? A slurry, you know, toxic waste impoundment is a dam, okay? And when something is seeping out of your dam, well, you say, well, we experienced a seeping from the Connor Run impoundment, which is better than saying, holy shit, our toxic waste dam is leaking. He went on to say the company promptly reported this event and is working with the appropriate governmental agencies in regard to this matter. They're working with the appropriate. I'm so glad those governmental agencies are appropriate. They may be a little less appropriate now because of a little something something that happened along the way. Yeah. Because there's been a purge at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. Of course. Anybody surprised? We've got a brand new secretary of the WVDEP named Austin Caperton. He's a coal executive. And he just canned two of the less odious people at that department. First person he got rid of was a woman by the name of Wendy Radcliffe. She was the environmental advocate at the WVDEP. It was her job to actually listen to people who object to being poisoned by the industries that the WVDEP is supposed to regulate, but pretty much won't. So she's gone. And guess who else is gone? Yeah, they've decided to ditch Kelly Gillenwater, the same person I just quoted there as saying that, you know, as giving the public statement about the seepage. Yep, Kelly Gillenwater's gone. Kelly Gillenwater's job was to be the spokesperson for the communications director for the WVDEP and has been there for 3 years or so. And had, as Ken Ward reports, developed a reputation for pushing to make agency officials more responsive to new news media requests. Meanwhile, the department offered no explanation because they owe no explanation. Because that's how that works. Yeah? Yeah. Lovely, isn't it? Yeah. Beautiful. I just love me a Stalinist purge. I don't know about you, but I'm already feeling great all over. Oof. So, wow, where does the time go? It is 6 minutes past the hour. It's time to fire up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch on the Horn. If you've never participated before, again, the way you do it is you get on Skype and send to Sparky Dunk, not to me, Sparky Dunk on Skype, send a request to join the group, and he will he'll turn the Bob signal on up against the clouds and show you the breadcrumb trail, and next thing you know, you'll be participating in Friday on the Front Porch. Well, that's true. Going back to the question of outreach, reaching out, James says the only reason those jackasses reach out is so they can grab something they want to steal, which is true. Oh, one more for Donnie, says Kitty in Boston. Kublai Khan. Ah. Is anybody making a list? We need a list. So let's take a break and get the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable up and running. And as a reminder, if you absolutely cannot use Skype, you are welcome to use the Stress Line. That, of course, is named after Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, who would have celebrated his birthday the first day of this month. And that number is 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. Oh, okay, sorry. A little clarification coming from Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. Seepage. This is the Trump era, Bob. That's life-giving arsenic. Absolutely. Thank you for the correction. We regret the error. Yep. Oh, let's see. Do I have... Yeah, I do. So we'll, it's not two tickets to paradise, but it's okay. A little Eddie money in commemoration of Billable Rick's challenge. And hey, thanks very kindly to Greg and to Charlene for finishing off Tracy's challenge. So that means a total of $180 will be knocked out of, and so that means we got $302 to go, which is wonderful news. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thank you very, very much. All right, break time, and then, well, we will see where the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable takes us. This is listener-supported conversation radio, Friday on the Front Porch, the 27th of January. The last broadcast for, dear God, 9 days or so. So if you got something on your mind, best get it said now. I'm Bob Kincaid. No, it's not. Stop that. I mean, I love that song, but it's a little downbeat, but okay. That must mean this is that. No. There we go. Everything's misnamed. Everything's an adventure. This is the Horn. We'll be back. I thought that thing had a cold ending. So we have gotten our obligatory Eddie Money out of the way since Rick is off to see Eddie Money this evening. It's Friday on the front porch on the Horn, 13 past the hour, hour and 13 minutes into the program. Angry pointing out LOL, Midnight Special, Don Kirchner again. I remember this one because a girlfriend used to sing it to me in college under a tree after the bigots walked past us. The power of memory is strong. And let's see, we've got the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. We've also got Dave in Talibandiana on the stress line. Let's check in with Dave and make sure he's there. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, you?
I've had better weeks. But
you just said a mouthful.
Will people be addressing the little orange dictator by yelling "Hail Squeezer"?
I can't imagine. Yeah, "Hail Squeezer," absolutely.
I wanted to thank you guys for getting me through my holiday. You don't know how important this is for me on a weeknight. It gets me through. I look forward to it. And if we don't hang together, we shall certainly hang separately. And that's what I wanted to say tonight, Bob.
Well, I'm glad you did, Dave, and I thank you for jumping in and swinging by. Let me bring on the rest of the group so they can say hi, too, okay?
Okay.
Stand by. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Pretty good.
Larry, you need to mute.
And were you, from a technical standpoint, were you able to hear Dave?
Yes.
And Dave, you can hear Sparky?
I can barely hear anybody.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to push. Okay. Maybe that'll make a difference. But, where were you at the beginning of the program? Were you still folding space, Sparky?
Well, I was out there, and my other computer out there, gave me fits. I couldn't sign in, and the mosquitoes were attacking me, because I started pruning the apricot tree today.
And does that bring mosquitoes?
No, but they're around because of the standing water.
Oh, okay, I'm just nice trying to follow
sun.
Here.
The nice warm sun's out, and we got robins again. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, although robins never really leave. They just go somewhere. They just go. They roost differently. I learned that a couple of years ago in D.C.
Well, they only hang out here for a certain time of the year, and then they're gone.
Yeah, they hide. But, yeah, I guess winter's over for you, right?
Well, it's starting to head towards spring.
Yeah, which means that by the time February...
After all the damn rain, I'm glad to see sunshine again.
Absolutely, and by February, we will have moved into what we refer to here, Gerald will be in rare form once we're in the real teeth of winter, about every 15 minutes saying, "Shut it, Sparky," when you're talking about the lovely spring weather in Northern California.
Oh, and when I tell them about how all the fruit trees are blooming in February.
Yeah, that's when, because in addition to being...
The almond orchards are just glorious if you've never seen one when they bloom.
Oh, I bet they are gorgeous. And, we'll be freezing. Yeah, because Gerald is not just the deacon in charge of the building and grounds committee. He's also the chairman of Shut It Sparky when Sparky starts talking about the lovely spring weather in February.
Oh, I wanted to say something about that picture I sent yesterday of Shasta Dam.
Yeah.
That was on January 12th. And that was the first time in 6 years they'd released water like that out of the dam.
Wow. Well, that's got to be a bit of a relief, doesn't it?
Well, when they do that, there's a lot of more. They know there's a lot more water coming. And they got to make room for it, and they can't just get it all down through the penstocks to the generators.
Wow.
Because you can only put so much water through those penstocks.
Well, that's true.
Usually one of the generators is down for maintenance all the time.
While another one runs?
Mm-hmm. There's five of them, and they're huge. I mean, they're bigger than a damn house. I mean... Was around and stuff and tall. You look, man standing next to it looks real small compared to the big huge turbine generators that are in there.
Yeah, I remember getting to tour down into Wilson Dam, which is there where I grew up, and it was several stories below the water line of the water surface of the Tennessee River, and those things were monumental.
This will blow your mind. And a company out of Canada is used to maintain them.
Canada?
Yeah.
Well, has anybody told Trump?
I don't think so. But maybe somebody in Bureau of Reclamation will say something to somebody.
Yeah. Because, you know, there is that aspect of it. You know, Ron in the Frozen North has been talking about the ramifications of some of this stuff. We get oil. We got so many new names to use. I want to use them all. Julius Squeezer has said he's going to slap a 20% tariff on stuff coming from Mexico. You know what most of the stuff that comes from Mexico to us is?
Oil.
Yeah. So, you reckon Ma and Pa Trumpansy are going to feel great again once they start paying 20% extra for gasoline at the pump?
No, that's what that cracks me up.
Well, and then, of course, we will be reminded that it's all Obama's fault, so...
Well, the president of Mexico is just laughing his ass off.
The president of Mexico is eating his lunch. Former president of Mexico is eating his lunch.
Oh, yeah. He's doing great, too.
I mean, he went on Vicente Fox went on MSNBC's Morning Joe this morning and called Trump Hitler. And said the video of him giving a speech to the Republican conclave or whatever it was reminiscent of Hitler addressing the Nazi party. I mean, damn. At this rate, we'll be in a war with Mexico in about 15 minutes.
Oh, and I got another fun fact for you, Bob.
Yeah?
I know you probably didn't think about it, but the NLRB has a new chairperson.
That's true.
And what
god-awful human being is it?
He's not god-awful. He was put on the board by Obama, but...
Oh.
You know where he went to school?
No.
Wharton.
Same place as... How did...
Trump, there's two openings on the NLRB, but he'll have to appoint, but, I mean, they wrote... They get... appointed for terms, and you can't kick them off until the terms are over, and then they just leave.
Right, but I mean, no. How did the Tangerine Tiberius actually graduate from college? That's what I want to know. How did he get out of Wharton?
There must be some money involved.
I think there were a few checks written, don't you? I mean, realistically, even among the Trumpansy, Sparky, is there anybody out there who can imagine that man writing a term paper? I mean, honest to Jesus.
He delegated that task to somebody else, Bob.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what he does.
Because that's what makes him a, that's what makes him a business genius. And thanks to Kitty in Boston, Sleazer Disgustus.
Oh,
wow.
God.
Oh, wow.
That's good.
I mean, that's a big, loud cow, but Sleazer Disgustus.
Oh, and did you see the video of him on Air Force One?
I got to admit, it's going to be difficult for the program and everything, but I can scarcely bear to see video of him at all. No, I didn't. What was it? Help me here.
Well, the reporters got to go in and see him sitting at the desk, you know, with the bomber jacket on the back of the chair and everything, and all the trappings. But he's got Fox News blaring in the room.
Well, of course he does. And you know, when I saw the Vicente Fox remarks today, one of the first things that popped into my mind was, well, son of a bitch, who knew there was a fox that told the truth? Crickets, tough crowd.
Yeah.
I'd give you a cowbell if I had one.
Okay. Hi, Laurel. And by the way,
mine's out in the man cave.
Need a little check in here. John Fox just now let me know, said, I think the PayPal thing is fixed. Have some folks check it, you know, have some folks try to use the contribute tab, and let's find out.
No, it's too late for Raup. She ended up going through me because she couldn't figure out how to get, get it through you.
Well, John says he thinks it's fixed. And wait, I am I have been remiss. There is one challenge remaining now. All this week, Chris in Germany has put forward a $100 challenge each evening to help us get where we're going. So there is now a $100 challenge on the table, and that'll knock out, if it's met, that'll knock out $200 and leave us at $102 to go to finish this massive fundraising effort. So thank you very kindly, Chris, and let's cross our fingers, shall we? But if anybody wants to try the PayPal interface at headonradionetwork.com, John says he thinks it's working.
Oops.
So maybe we'll find out in a minute if somebody wants to try the interface.
Oh, and if Don's listening, I'm going to try and add him to the Skype group. But I can't until he accepts my contact request.
Okay, hopefully
Don from PA.
Yeah, hopefully Don just heard that in the chat room. Kitty in Boston says it's going to be a long week without the horn. Safe travels. It's going to be a long week for me too, because I'm going to, you know, when I don't have this, I wind up yelling at clouds, and it's no fun. So we got that. Well, who all do we have in the room there this evening? We've heard from Rick, and I just heard Laurel. Hey, Steve from Georgistan, what's happening, man?
What's going on, Bob?
I'm fine as frogs here. How about you?
Doing pretty good, man. Just cross-eyed over Kellyanne Conway's and her duplicitous nature. Jesus, have you heard? If you go to Media Matters, you'll hear all the doublespeak she did when she was pulling for Ted Cruz or advising him.
Oh, yeah. She hated Trump. He was the devil.
Oh, yeah. He was the devil. And she actually demanded to see his tax returns, you know, demanded to see it. And now everything's changed.
Well, of course, because that was so, you know, 8 months ago.
But how can you look in the camera and lie to people knowing that you're on tape on something that you just
Because Steve, she knows that the short-term memory of the American people is somewhat slightly less than that of, I don't know, slime mold.
But she's not a stupid lady, Bob. She has to know that we have recording devices and all this shit's going to come back and haunt her.
No, it's not.
That's the best way to get under Trump's skin, is to just keep replaying that over and over again. And did you know Trump has did away with the comment line at the whitehouse.gov? You can't call and leave a comment anymore. He's done away with the Spanish page. I've never seen anything like this, Bob. We're traveling down a very dark road, and it's only going to get darker.
PayPal interface is up and running. $11 is on its way to you right now, Bob.
And it just landed. Thank you, Laurel. Thank you very kindly. That's awesome. And let me see here. And thanks to Ralph's, by the way, courtesy of Sparky. And thank you to Gene Ann as well. Thank you very much. So we're making progress on the $100 challenge. We're making progress. So glory hallelujah.
Have you seen Trump's nominations for the Supreme Court next week that he's going to propose?
What do you mean nominations? He only gets one.
Well, he's got two. He's floating around.
He's got a short. Yeah, there was. Well, it was a short list.
He's got a short list.
It was a short list of three, and then William Pryor of Alabama, who has. In his background, in his history, in his closet, some naked gay pics of himself on a gay hookup website, and of course he's a Family Values Republican. Pryor is,
but it won't matter.
No, it won't matter. Apparently, the evangelicals somehow or another objected to him, so that's how it got down to two. And one of them's Gorsuch, And the other one is a guy that his sister, who sits on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals.
Thomas Hardiman.
Yeah. Is it Hardiman or Hardiman?
Hardiman. But anybody within my voice, and just everybody, we need to call our congressman every day and just keep hammering against these guys. Hell, you'll be right close enough to touch them next week, Bob. So keep that.
Well,
on your,
in the case of Supreme Court nominees and nominees for cabinet positions, we need to be clear. We need to be reaching out to our senators.
Exactly. Your two senators, call them and just pester the hell out of them. If you got to call 10 times a day. I mean, they wouldn't let Merrick Garland in, for Christ's sakes.
And he was a darling of the right wing at one point.
Oh, yeah. Orrin Hatch sung his praises.
It's astonishing.
Yeah.
But that goes back to something, and we've kind of had this conversation, and I think maybe it's worth going a little further into, perhaps. Is there any reason for every Democrat in the Senate not to vote against Jeff Sessions?
Jefferson Davis, Beauregard Sessions.
Beauregard Sessions. I don't know, with Elizabeth Warren's comments against Dr. Sleepy, I don't know what the hell these Dems are going to do, you know?
I mean, they're basically being total politicians here. It's like, you know, they're showing that they're sellouts, and it just kind of contributes to the idea that, you know, activists like us have that, look, you know, these people aren't that much different than the Republicans. I mean, they are, but I mean, you know, you could, like, you know, they kind of mistake themselves for Republican light. And if you have a choice between Republican light and full on fascist, they're going, you know, most people are going to pick the full on fascist.
But Rick, why is it they stick together like glue, but when it comes to the Dems, they fall apart, man? They melt down.
Because I think Democrats believe in, you know, free thinking, free thoughts. They like to make up their own minds. It's hard to get Democrats to agree on anything, which also
they've agreed on one person,
Betsy DeVos.
Yeah, Al Franken come out and said, "Ain't no Democrat voting for her."
Seriously? Okay. Well,
you know that's what? Well, hold the damn phone, okay? I will be shocked if Joe Manchin votes against her. I'll be somewhat pleased. I'll say something nice about him if he votes against her, but I will be shocked. Because
according to Al Franken, they have a strategy.
Yeah, it just seems like their strategy is to roll over like fat seals.
Yeah, right, yeah.
He was on Rachel Maddow last night, and he wouldn't go into big details, but he said we have a strategy.
So, could somebody tell me who else has been actually approved? The nomination's been approved in the last couple of days. I've kind of missed out.
Bob, do you know, or do you want me to research it?
Go, Steve, go.
All right. Well, go ahead and talk. I'll have to research this.
Oh, okay.
What? Who's been approved?
I guess. Who the hell? Has Mnuchin been approved yet?
No.
No. Okay. What about Tom Price? Probably not him, huh?
No.
Okay.
Rick Perry hasn't been approved. Sessions hasn't been.
Yeah.
No, mostly what we've got is the lining up and the pre-vote counting going on now. Because you know, understand, they don't take these votes without knowing beforehand what the outcome is going to be.
Right. What about Rex Drillerson? Has he been approved yet?
Tillerson, no.
No. Okay.
I mean, saying you will vote for somebody is not the same thing as the actual vote taking place.
That's true. But as far as the State Department, let's talk about that for a little bit.
Oh, Jesus.
As far as the purge of these second or third level officials, apparently the initial word was they just resigned en masse, but I think later on it's been determined that they were basically asked to resign. They were fired, essentially. And so I think this is a matter of Vlad calling the shots and basically saying, you must get some good, friendly, Russian-friendly people in
force moose and squirrel to drop sanctions.
Right, right, exactly. So,
or else we take moose and squirrel to Lubyanka prison.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's clear what's going on here. I mean, why would you get rid of such senior people who've served both Republican as well as Democratic presidents? These are like consummate professionals. They're apolitical in the way they carry out their job. You know, they do what, you know, the president at the time believes is best for, you know, the foreign policy of America. And now there's like nobody in charge of the store. So who's going to be named? Of course, you're going to get some stooges for Russia, along with Rex Tillerson, assuming that he gets through, which looks like he's going to get through.
Well, ever since Marco Rubio folded like a cheap suit.
Oh, he's full of shit. He's just, you know, it's all about attention for little Marco. I mean, he talks a good game, but I mean, based on what he said about Rex, how can you square a yes vote with all the negative comments he said about Rex? It's like total cognitive dissonance. I'm surprised his brain didn't explode while he was, you know, as he said he was going to vote yes.
Well, you have to have, you have to have a brain to have it explode. So where we are, Steve just sent this along to me, Steve from Georgistan. Where we are in the process is committee. You know, these things, the reason the hearings are in the committees is because there are committees who have jurisdiction over these various agencies. And so a number of nominees have reported out of committee. But they haven't necessarily, gone to a floor vote. Nikki Haley is out of committee.
Wasn't she sworn in the other day?
Was she? Maybe.
She was. Yeah, she was sworn in by the VP because. Business off from Trump.
Right, and Mattis was sworn in today.
Oh, okay.
And Pompeo is in at CIA. So, you know, it's happening.
Yeah.
But, one of the, and it may be pretty, oh, God, it may be pretty zany in D.C. next week.
Yeah.
Because
wear your roller skates.
It gets to be double plus fun good when you're standing in a line around the block trying to get through a security checkpoint just to go and visit congressional offices.
Yeah.
There's a bajillion offices. People going through to go to various and sundry committee hearings.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bob, I'm going to be in D.C. on February 13th. I'm going to be visiting the IRS national office. I'm trying to convince them to give my client some relief that they've requested. It's called a private letter ruling. So that'll be interesting. I had initially been scheduled to be there on January 30th, but I had to put that off because we needed time to coordinate things and, you know, get a better fare for the tickets and stuff like that. But I haven't been to DC for, geez, since I was probably 7 years old, 8 years old, maybe.
It's changed a little bit, I'll warrant.
Yeah, I imagine it has. It was a busy city when I visited it when I was young, but, you know.
Well, but you're going to, now you will be experiencing it in all its paranoid security-induced glory.
Yeah, I can't wait. Should I bring my AK with me or not, Bob? What do you think?
You know, I'd leave it at home at this time.
Okay.
Give the Congress and Trump a little time though, and they'll probably be giving out AKs at the door.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm gonna contact my local congressman's office and see if I can get a tour of the Capitol or something like that. He's Adam Schiff. He's a former prosecutor in the office I used to work in. So.
And not to lean on you or anything, you will be reaching out to him about the AIC Act, right?
Can you give me some materials and a little talking, some talking points so I can just email me something so I can have something.
Well, I mean, we don't have a bill number yet, okay? Because it hasn't officially launched. But a Dear Colleague letter has gone out, and that's what they're called, Dear Colleague letters. Okay. So you can just email them or phone them or whatever and say, hey, a Dear Colleague letter has gone out on the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, and I really want you to sign it as a co-sponsor. Join on as a co-sponsor before it launches.
Okay. Yeah, he's an all-around very, you know, responsive congressman. I think he's pledged to, you know, be part of the resistance, I think, you know, for the most part. You know, he's a very good liberal, very reliable liberal. I think he did attend the inauguration, but probably only because he's in a leadership position in the House Intelligence Committee, I think. You know, so he gets access to all the top secret stuff, I'm sure, you know. But I mean, he'd be great in higher office as well, like as a senator, or maybe he'll run for Feinstein's position when she finally exits, which will be none too soon, you know.
And see, she's another one of those reasons I have a hard time believing, not that I doubt Sparky, but she's another one of those reasons I have a hard time believing that every Democrat is going to line up against Betsy DeVos.
Well, yeah, I mean, talk about singularly unqualified. Then again, you could say the same thing about just about anybody that, you know, the Clementine Caligula has nominated, you know?
Kumquat Kaiser.
There you go. Lots of good names. We should definitely make a top 10 list, maybe submit it to late night. See if
And I said earlier, Mango Mao. No, the Mango Mussolini.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, I also like Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, too. That works.
But see, we're going to need, I mean, I really do. I hope somebody was making a list, because I need to hang a list in front of me here until I get them memorized.
Yeah. I've got about like 10 of them written down. I've got Nectarine, Nero, Peach Pol Pot, Mango Mao, Kumquat Kaiser, Clementine Caligula, Tangerine Tiberius, Sallow Sulla, Marmalade Menace, Jules Squeezer, and there was another one that had to do with Jules Squeezer. I think Tracy said that. What was it, Tracy? Oh. No Tracy, I guess.
Let me look here. Oh, and by the way, Sylvia said she deeply appreciates the double cowbell and will wear the honor with pride.
And Bob, I kicked in my 40.
Yes.
And I sent it to paypal.com, and I sent it to your email address of bobkincaid@gmail.com. You'll get that, right?
It already landed.
Awesome. Okay, great.
But happy day. The PayPal interface is up and running again. That's wonderful news. And if anybody wants to try, remember, Tracy's also got a challenge on for new subscribers. She'll bump the next 4 new subscribers by $5, lickety split. And so maybe if somebody wants to try a $10 subscription and click that make this a recurring monthly donation box, we'll see if that works too. Liberius Fraudius Zero. That was Kitty. And Ocarus. Okay, Sylvia had Ocarus Overlord and Apricot Asshole. Are you getting all these, Rick?
I got them, I think.
Okay, cool. I see that Snork has wandered into the room. Good evening, Snork. How are you?
Sorry, I have a mouthful of food and a plate in my hands.
That can be dangerous, but at least it's better than having a handful of food and a plate in your mouth.
Yes. Good news on the trip out of town, and it's been a little bit cold out here, but the weather's pretty normal. I guess all I can think of is I'm thinking of putting out a short book on how to live through the Trump depression. But I currently have extreme fears that, see, I'm not anti-trade. I'm just fair trade. If we have no trade at all, then our money becomes worthless. Our belongings become worthless. Our able to interact with other countries becomes worthless. And in the 90s, we shipped off all of our companies that made machine tools offshore. If we immediately cut off imports, we're not going to be able to bring back any machine tools to make anything. And that's my biggest concern. Our optimum trade, international trade, would be 50% that we send out as much as we come in. That's countries working together. And personally, I would like to see an executive order. This is all that's necessary. The law is already on the books. Ronald Reagan suspended it during his first term. And that would be to say the Pentagon can only buy materials from either American companies or from companies in countries that have trade parity with the United States. And then define parity by, no trade deficit with us 3 out of 6 years. If we did that in a very short time, cooperation between all of the countries that want to do business with our Pentagon, and Pentagon is the number one place that people want to sell to in the world. It's the biggest budget of any corporation there is $400 billion a year in purchases. And everybody lines up for that.
Snork, you might be in a better position than most to address this question. I'm seeing a lot of talk about the fact that, you know, another of the myriad things that the Trumpansies failed to comprehend in the midst of the hurricane of bullshit that was rained down on them by the Mango Menace, the Marmalade Menace, thank you, Tracy, during the campaign. This idea that, you know, we can bring our manufacturing jobs back. Well, haven't a lot of those human manufacturing jobs turned into robotic jobs? Yes. So at most we're talking about bringing back robots.
Even in Asia, where we think they're doing it all with people, they're not. Asia is heavily robotic. When you start talking about robots and the most probable gains in what robots can do over the next 30 or 40 years, we have to think our economic system. If only the wealthy people can own robots, then only the wealthy people will have income. We do not have a monetary model on this planet at this moment that could actually support heavy automation, flexible. Let's say heavy flexible automation, and that's the type where you use a lot of AI. The other type of automation is transfer line automation, and that's where you see in the huge automotive factories that takes 5 years to plan a change, even a minor change in an automotive factory. We're not going to see that ever come back. But what we will see is more and more automation. There are not very many parts in a car that you could not automate the assembly of. And in the foreign plants that I've been to, and I've been at foreign plants for electronics and automotive and toys, I guess. But the factory in Billund, Denmark, that makes Legos is extremely automated. All of the personnel that interact with the machines are highly trained. And I see a problem that we have a lag in our educational system of probably 30 years to start properly training people. This is a time where we need to be increasing our education, not dumbing it down. Now, with over 3 to 5 million truckers in the United States, the automation of trucking is going to be the most devastating. Majority of truckers, I don't mean to call them stupid, but the majority of them will never be able to work in a different industry. They've learned trucking, they've got it down, trucking is a thing. 3 million trucking jobs should be gone within 10 years.
Is that okay? Let me ask you. I mean, that's a pretty profound statement, Snork. You say that people who drive truck are never going to be able to work in another industry.
Well, you're not going to see them becoming computer programs.
Right. So that's the next. That's the. So what about the coal miners who were heavily courted during this past presidential campaign? Is it realistic to think that they're going to become rocket scientists?
No, it's not. No, it's not. I constantly see this charity where they teach the homeless to be computer programmers. Well, some of them might be good. But you're not going to turn every homeless person into a computer programmer. But the trucking is the one that I think is going to be the most profound, and it's going to hit hard and it's going to hit heavy. And most of the truck drivers are Republican. And that's where I think we are going to see a difference. Debbie Wasserman Schultz sold out the Floridian truckers. They'll be the second or the third state, I think third or fourth state, actually, to get the new trucks in. And what will happen is a truck will be sitting at the dock. It won't even have a cabin in it to move the truck. Basically, when they want the truck moved, they will Skype somebody in India, and that person will drive it out to the highway, just like a drone is piloted. Once they're on the highway, they turn it over to automatic. And just like with the radio stations, where they have one DJ supporting 100 channels, where they only talk between the music and then switch over or play whatever tapes, they go to the next station. That's what these drivers will do. They'll get it on the highway, turn it over to automatic, and they will log out of that job, and they will log into the next truck that needs a driver. And they will pull that out, get it onto the highway, get it going. So one driver might be servicing 30, 40, or 100 trucks. And when the truck gets to the donation, or doesn't, to where it needs to go, it will contact and request a driver in India. And that driver will pilot it into park where it needs to go, or take it into the dock for unloading. It's also conceivable that within 10 to 15 years, we will not see people in fork trucks loading and unloading vehicles.
It sounds to me, if we extrapolate further, 10 to 15 years, we won't see people sitting on D9 Caterpillars tearing apart mountains. It'll all be done by some little dude in India.
That is correct.
Virtually.
And again, Debbie Wasserman Schultz got endorsed by the people who are going to be losing their jobs to these.
Well, and you mentioned that. It's also valuable to note, and I saw this over at the Lawyers, Guns, and Money blog, a bunch of the building trades. And, you know, I'm pro-labor. I'm pro-organized labor. But damn, Trump has hoodooed a bunch of the building trades into signing on with his fantasy of the Keystone XL and the Dakota Access Pipeline, and same thing. There's going to be 400,000 fantastic, marvelous, unbelievable, incredible jobs. 400,000
pipe fitters. Laborers and operating engineers, and then people to build the compressor stations, and that's about it.
Most of the jobs have already come and gone. Most of them were part-time in the first place, and there's only going to be about 180 full-time jobs. And so, we've
180
seen
with the current technology, probably 40 with the technologies we have. this
talk that are on the way,
IoT, is changing as much as many things as we do now are going to be just as different as when the personal computer and cell phones came in. These devices interact so well. The McDonald's walk up and say what you want can almost be handled by Alexa or Cortana now. I think in 2 years we won't be seeing anybody working at McDonald's at the counter. Or if they do, it's the one person for handling special orders.
So here's the question. Where are all those working people going to go?
And who's going to check out the quality of the food? A robot?
Yeah. I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
The robot can actually, in many instances, can pick out flaws in the food. It can do a multi-spectral analysis. It can spot different organisms, or in the case of certain restaurants, ignore certain organisms.
So you're saying we may even be in better hands then?
But here's the question.
In places I've automated.
Do the people go?
That's the issue where we need to be seriously talking.
It sounds like we're going to have to redefine not only the meaning of work, but the meaning of human existence.
Well, first of all, the human, I've designed major factories with major robotic systems.
What's the matter with you?
It's usually when we implement these, we take out the jobs first that injure people. We take out the high-risk jobs, we take out the repetitive jobs, and the jobs we keep people for are for the jobs where we need people to think, see, reason, and understand when things go wrong. Robots do not understand variability well. They do not understand unusual and new problems. A human is very good at that. Well, I've never seen that before. Robots are not good at that.
Well, let me try to put this in some historical perspective. And I've been looking around. I'm trying to find a good book on the subject, and I haven't yet. But I like specific periods. I like to read about history that I haven't read about before. You know, I can always go back and take refuge in the classics and everything, and there's a rich body of knowledge there. But it's not going to be a lot of help in this regard, I don't think. I would like to know what happened to the people who were dependent upon the whaling industry in New England when whaling ended.
Well,
where did they go? What happened to them?
Yeah, I'd like to see more of that myself, but I can kind of project what would have happened. As the whaling industry died was as the oil industry was picking up.
Yep.
It was also at the time when factory jobs were picking up. So there were jobs. There was an expanding need for people that could use similar skills that they had. Many of the whalers probably went to the fishing industry, the ones that couldn't move inland to inland jobs. But now we do not have an expanding need for jobs, because almost every field, the labor part of it, is going to collapse.
Well, this was first evident in the banking industry. Now everything, check deposits, everything you can do from your own home, through your smartphone. You don't have to make deposits anymore.
Exactly. Now, at New York City originally New York needed all those people, because people were doing the math by hand. They would be doing, New York was an accounting and transaction town. And all of those buildings were people just writing numbers down. One personal computer probably eliminated the need for 5,000 workers.
Hey, Steve, tell Cletus she's an awfully good puppy. Because fundraising just got taken down by $10, courtesy of Steve and Cletus and Miss Karen.
PayPal is working great, Bob. Just wanted to let you know.
Yep, it is. And thank you very kindly to John Fox for that.
Thank you, Mr. Fox.
He has worked diligently.
Thank you, John.
Yep.
And thank you, Laurel. And gosh, I'm trying to.
Bring Jules in here when you can. She's got a very important announcement, a way to get under Agent Orange skin when you can. I mean, your show.
Okay. Jules, I mean, I just had an email from Darius, and subject line automation. Bob, if no one has a job, who'll buy the products? And that's what I mean when I say that we need to seriously rethink what the human experience means.
Well, we need to, you're hitting on it exactly. What would the workforce look like that we are going to need in 30 years? And what do we have to do to get there? And it is infrastructure. And what we will always need is a bunch of people that are aware, alert, and able to handle new situations. And so basically, I think we're going to lose New York City no matter what. But New York City is our biggest hamper, and other large cities like it. But it's the prime example in my head.
I just got a note from Steve in China, who said, not to make you pee down your leg or anything, but computer programming bores the shit out of me, but I feel pretty damn intelligent. Besides which, computers are going to be programming other computers soon, too. Surplus population is the real problem, and targeted genocide is the new solution. Just one second, please. I'm just trying to get everybody's word in. James says, subject line, construction jobs. Were you under the impression, Bob, that construction workers voted on what kind of buildings we put up? If something's built, we want it to go union. That's about the extent of our input. And no, I'm not under any misapprehensions. As Boss Man Wayne once remarked to me, and there is no... I don't know anyone who is more pro-worker than Boss Man Wayne. He said, look, where the building trades are concerned, we're total whores. He said, you want to build something hateful? Well, we want to build it for you, and we want to build it union, and we want people to have decent wages while they're building it. The point that I was making with regard to the Keystone XL and the Dakota Access Pipeline is most of the work has already been done, and most of those jobs that were going to be created have been created and are over. And that's what makes the building trades buying into that so sad, is that they bought a great, it's not that they're siding with Trump, that's whatever, it's that they bought a lie. The jobs aren't going to be there. Go ahead, Jules.
I was going to say, there's a lot of talk and discussion about minimum income in Europe right now, and even some places that are going to do some pilot programs. So I think that's probably where we're going to be heading in the future.
But how are you going to? But here's the question, because there are many different facets that are coming into conflict with each other with regard to this problem. How are you going to get the people who practice their religion with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other to quit fucking and quit making? Making all those little babies that are never going to have any future. I mean,
I'm not talking about America. I'm talking about Europe. So
I'm talking about the world.
There's a huge difference, and the world. You know, we'd have a lot better luck if we didn't have people like Trump cutting funds for birth control and contraceptive education. So,
Jules, talk. Tell everybody about the workaround for the White House comment line being down. There's a workaround for that, and I believe you know what it is, don't you?
Yeah, this actually was published in U.S. Uncut, but it is a good workaround. Bernie Sanders comes to the rescue again. The White House message line has been shut down, as everyone knows, if you tried to call it. thanks to Trump. And Revolution Messaging is who Bernie Sanders had hired to manage his campaign communications. Well, they've done a little bit of looking into things, and they have started a project called White House Incorporated. And the way it works is simple. All you have to do is put your phone number into their email, and they will connect you with Trump's business entities. Since Trump is saying that, you know, he's not really technically separated himself from his business entities yet, he has little White Houses around the world, right? So any of his businesses are technically part of his administration at this point. So calling any of his business entities would be technically putting you in touch with the White House. So they will put you in touch with one of his business entities, and you can leave your messages with them.
Yeah, and it just selects a random property and calls you through.
Mm-hmm. Still, it is just one way to kind of get under his skin a tad bit.
Right. We have to get under his skin. It's a good workaround, because right now he's shutting out the masses. He doesn't want to hear from us.
And he doesn't want to hear from us because he doesn't want to realize that he's being rejected is the thing.
Exactly.
Anything that shows that he's being rejected is the point.
That's why he's been a crowd queen. I mean, a size queen over his crowds. That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
He's a Fox News junkie.
Yes. Yes, you're exactly
right. Whatever Fox News can lead him to whatever they want him to say.
But thank you, Jules. I'm going to throw it back to everybody else.
Yeah, and
well,
basically,
I guess. Sorry.
I was just going to give the website. It's whitehouseinc.org. So if anyone's interested and you want to try it out, that's where you go. And like I said, plug in the information and they'll set you up. So.
Hey, I could just call his property out here in Palos Verdes, and it won't even be a toll call.
There you go.
Nice.
You've got to remember that Trump has got an ego the size of Texas, but it's very fragile. So I think, you know, he would be very easily to get out of the White House. I mean, all you have to do is just start collecting data on him, and I'm sure that he's screwed people over all his life, and they just dump it on him all at once. And I don't think he could take it. I think he would have a nervous breakdown.
Okay. Well, speaking of satire and humiliation, I think, and pardon me if I take over the show here for a few minutes, but I just recently completed my very first colonoscopy yesterday, and I got through that with flying colors. Well, I guess the only color they showed me on the pictures was tangerine, but I guess that's what it looks like. So there it is. But in honor of getting through my very first colonoscopy, I have a treat for everybody. I've decided to harken back to my days as a karaoke rat, back when my signature song happened to be none other than Lee Greenwood's Ode to the Merger of Church and State. And if you pardon me a few moments, I would like to share my rewriting of that wonderful tribute to you all. And if you pardon me, I hope everything works right on this, but I'll get the music queued up and enjoy.
Hey, Laurel, the music is never going to come through.
Okay. Well, how about I just do it a cappella for you?
Okay.
Let me get the right key to you. Trump is won and liberty is gone. We're drowning in the lies. Now we'll have to fight again with all the brown shirts from the right. I'm praying to the stars, cause I'm living here today, where the fascists have their kingdom. They just took it all away. And I'm bound to be an American, fighting fascists till I'm free, or I join the ranks of those who died to revive democracy. And I'll gladly stand up next to you in resistance all the way. Cause hell awaits us if we lose this land. God save the USA. We will march in Minnesota, storm the hills of Tennessee, beating Nazis down in Texas, scare the Donald till he pees. From Detroit down to Houston, and New York to LA, there's a fire in every true American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm bound to be an American, fighting fascists till I'm free, or I join the ranks of those who died to revive democracy, and I'll gladly stand up next to you in resistance all the way. Cause hell awaits us if we lose this land. God bless, save the USA. I am bound to be an American, fighting fascists till I'm free, or I join the ranks of those who died to revive democracy, and I'll gladly stand up, boom, next to you in resistance all the way. Cause hell awaits us if we lose this land. God save the USA.
Wow. Nicely done, man.
Nice pipes.
I wish Bob had a clap button, you know. Seriously.
Thank you.
You need to add just a little bit more space, because there's in the original, there's where is it? There's a place where there's a boom.
He tried to add that.
Boom,
you know.
I added the boom.
Yeah, I'm going acapella, Bob. That's tough, you know.
We've learned the hard way. Good job. Music doesn't go through Skype well at all.
Well, yeah, I understand, and he understands, but I'm just saying, good job, brother.
Well, I tell you what, I could not imagine the size of the crowds that I drew in singing that song. I did Veterans Day performances in front of 10, 12, 15,000 people doing that song back in the 90s. I mean, I did this song better than anybody I knew.
So you're a professional musician then?
This is my call.
Okay. All right. I got it. You know, they say once you receive a check for making music, you're a pro. So good going, man.
Well, Jude just wrote in and said, beautiful and impacting piece.
Thank you. Well, at least, you know, at least I was able to contribute a little bit of something besides the cheap jokes of saying I'm happy to have the colonoscopy in my rearview mirror.
see what he did there? Rearview mirror, huh? Yeah.
Rearview, yeah, I got it. No, Duke can sing, though. Good job, brother.
But you make use of whatever you can, and, you know, any talent is going to be helpful. Any artistic talent will be helpful. We definitely need our satire right now.
Thank you, Laurel.
And speaking of satire, this isn't. Elon Musk is declaring that Rexxon Tillerson might be an excellent Secretary of State. Asa just sent that along. Oh dear. And I've got a thought. I've got a last thought. Turning back to the work automation discussion of a few minutes ago. And let me add, it's 13 minutes past the hour. And we're still working on finishing off Chris in Germany's challenge. We got about $50 to go on that, just running the numbers in my head. And
by the way, yesterday I posted the lyrics up on your Facebook page, Bob. So if anyone wants to go up there and look, I also put the lyrics to my song up on the the White Rose Society Facebook page. So either one of those
very
places,
good.
You can look and find the lyrics to it.
Okay. There were some dandy good little moments in that lyric. So we've got about $50 to go on Chris in Germany's challenge, and then we've got another. Then we'll have a another hundred and some odd dollars just to finish everything off. So glory. And again, the PayPal button now works. So thank you, John Fox. Note came in from Ron in the frigid north. He said, I think there's another fundamental economic issue that needs to be addressed if we're talking about skills. We live in a society that believes you have to have a college degree to make a decent living. I would posit that over the course of a working career, a good welder, stonemason, plumber, pipe fitter, etc., will make a better living than your typical BA in liberal arts. A good Finnish carpenter is a treasure. Right now in Ontario, a master stonemason can sign on to a guaranteed multi-year project at $60 to $75 per hour plus full bennies. The federal government is rebuilding the parliament buildings. It's a 40-year project. It could be done in 15 if there were enough stonemasons. They're coming in from Great Britain and Europe on permanent working visas because proven masters like they cannot be found in North America. Now, I think there's a lot of truth in that. I mean, that's you know, what Snork was talking about. I think there's some stuff, you know, maybe the tools will change, but it's going to be hard to get a robot to do that kind of stuff.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Sparky.
You left Journeyman Inside Wireman out.
Well, that was Ron, not me.
Oh, okay.
I didn't leave anything out. Take that up with Ron. Come on, let's you and him fight.
Also, Bob, to me, the most important two things are is that we decouple the the entire workforce has to be decoupled from the locations. We have an abundance of people in New York City that are on welfare, generational welfare dependents. The Republicans use that as a club against us. A lot of them would take jobs if they could get to them, but the jobs just aren't in New York and they will never be there again. And we need to be able to have them move to somewhere else and have a support system there ready for them. A lot of people can't move because they need their mother to help them take care of the kids, or they need certain things that they could not be able to replace and still be able to work when they got there.
It's family values thing.
Right. So,
well, and you're going to be hard pressed. There's a lot of New Yorkers. You're going to be hard pressed to move out of New York because there's nothing but a vast wasteland outside of the boroughs.
Right. But the majority of the work that we'll pick up won't be in the north. It will be in the south. As we get farther and farther along, the north is not going to be the best place to make things. And we have to remember, I don't know how many people remember when cars used to have clutches. Because the internal combustion engine is so inefficient, if you use more than 5% of its power at any given time, it will die. Seize up. So the purpose of the clutch is to let it ease into the load so that you're only using 5% of your engine at a time. And the same thing is true with the population. We can't make a change immediately. It has to be slow. People don't realize that you just can't start and stop these things. But the people need to be able to move and need to have a support system there capable of making up for where they're at. If there's no place for them to move to that they can afford, they can't go. If they can't afford to get there, they can't go. You know, so right now, for the next 15, 20 years, the most available jobs are going to be in agriculture, not in any heavy manufacturing. It would take us at least 10 years to bring manufacturing back.
Once Trump gets his wall built, we won't be keeping people south of the border out. We'll be keeping people north of the border in. So that, you know, maybe the Trumpansies will finally have that golden opportunity they've been yearning for to pick lettuce and strawberries.
Yeah, we might be paying people $20 an hour for picking lettuce and strawberries.
No,
the
we won't.
The other thing that I hate to bring up is advancements in agriculture.
Not in California.
In 15 to 20 years, we might not see people bending over to pick strawberries anymore.
Somebody will make a machine to do it.
Sorry. I'm involved.
Well, hey, I just got a note in from Earther, also known as Emilio. But Earther says, manufacturing, robotics, service economies, and domo arigato. Yeah. Yes, robotics. Yes, robotics are important. Still, countries with strong manufacturing are some of the strongest economies in the world. Germany, China, Japan, California. When England was the industrial powerhouse in the 19th century of the world, they were the wealthiest country. Similarly with the U.S. in the 20th century, the British tried to dominate the world precisely to become the manufacturers of the world and to dominate every market they could. Manufacturing is important because it is where the greatest value is added. Service-based economies are always ancillary to manufacture and do not add as much value. Of course, what you're talking about is or touches on the new information revolution as opposed to the industrial revolution. And I get all that, but I live in a place, and not trying to make this all about me. This isn't about me. It's about the future of where I am. When West Virginia was first settled, or Appalachia was first settled, what that meant is that white folks came in and drove out the native people who'd been living here for 10 or 15,000 years. They succeeded here largely as a matter of subsistence agriculture. And subsistence agriculture doesn't mean everybody's hanging at the brink of starvation. It's a term of art. But most of what they ate, they grew. Or, you know, raised. Or, you know, bred. That all gets destroyed with the rise of coal. So you get people addicted to a coal mono economy for a while. Well, look, there's nobody in the Horn Family Community Congregation dippy enough to think that coal is coming back. But the question is, what replaces it? Or do we just say, listen, you know what, we just need to depopulate Central Appalachia and turn it back over to the bears and the elk and the deer and the squirrels and the turkeys and hope that some of this poisonous moonscaping will eventually mitigate itself and go from there. I mean,
the same question applies
to all those aggrieved, economically anxious white folks in the so-called Rust Belt. Their jobs left, and I am not without sympathy. But the question is, if their jobs left, why did they stay?
Well, I was watching a YouTube video. It was an old British military video about Germany right after the war. It came out in 1946. And basically the premise was how to rebuild a war-torn Germany. And Britain's response, as well as most of the other allies, was to shove as much coal down the throats of the Germans as possible to get them to be on the same page as the allies. Well, Germany found a way to get off of that coal-based economy. And they came out of that economy. They basically were, you know, force-fed coal when they were nothing but a moonscape themselves, and they found a way to turn it around. Whereas, you know, where 70 years later, they're one of the leading solar producing energy producers in the world. So, you know, if they can find a way after being completely demolished, something that can be done with Appalachia.
Well, I asked that question specifically because, you know, I constantly hear, you know, if Appalachia's so bad, why don't you leave? And people don't ask that of me, with a mean spirit. They ask it with a real and sincere inquiry. It's been pointed out that you've got people who come to the United States, in many instances on foot, from south of the border, just desperate to get here and do anything to live. And they've left homes. In many instances, they left those very self-same family subsistence farms in Mexico, or they've left as a result of violence in places like Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. In the United States, we have our own example. I just mentioned it in the chat room. When it gets bad enough, you go. And, you know, you think things like John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath come to mind.
Both Mexico and The Grapes of Wrath, they didn't have a system to fall back on to provide them care. Now, I'm for welfare and whatever. But in this case where it's generational, it's becoming an anchor where they can't get away. They don't meet the threshold of what they need to do to get out of town to get a job. Also, that brings up another question that this might sound horrible, but majority of the jobs that I see a lot of the immigrants coming from the South, where they barely have the language skills to communicate, are prime jobs for automation. And I bring this up because I am working on a project with a professor of plant physiology in SUNY out in New York. And I am currently growing coffee and bananas in Iowa. So there is new forms of agriculture coming, and it's going to hit us hard. And it brings us back to the, what do we do with these people? And how do we make sure that we have an economy that doesn't leave people behind that want to work? And Bob, there are millions of jobs out there that we could be doing if we were wise. And we have,
but we aren't,
a massive army of people that could be addressing climate change. And there's all kinds of little things that we do. And we've talked about that before. It's kind of there are some things that we could be doing if we had a lot of people. And cleaning up the environment. We have massive spills. West Virginia alone needs to be picked over by 3 million people. And these coal impoundment things, it's not going to be a one-day thing. There's more work involved in cleaning up a coal impoundment than there is in every pipeline in the country. Why aren't we? We have all these people. In World War II, we built a city in Appalachia that was huge that nobody could, you know, nobody knew about. But we built that city huge quickly, and I think that was in Tennessee. But we could do the same thing. We could build a city and tell people, come here. We'll give you a decent job. We'll give you good wages. It's going to take years. You're going to be here 10 years. And we're going to clean up this coal impoundment plant. And you know what? You work with us for those 10 years. We're going to build another one. And we're going to clean up the next coal impoundment plant. And we're going to put 5,000 people to work cleaning that up. And maybe we should start taxing the fossil fuels for the amount of money that it's going to cost. Let's not tell Mexico to build us a wall. Let's start telling the fossil fuel industry to start building these remediation centers where we get in and we clean up their mess.
I like it. I love it all in theory.
Yeah, Bob. It's not going to get done in the next 4 years.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, who?
This is Scott.
Oh, hey, Scott. Hey, Punky.
I like all these workarounds, but we seem to be missing a step. And the step is, in order for anything to work, the people in charge of what's next have to live in a world that includes the notion that things can and must work. And it seems built in to the system that there's always going to be a division where there are people who want stuff to work and do everything they can to cause that to come into being, but there are going to be people on the other side who that's the last thing they want is for things to work, because if things suddenly began to work, it would negate the justification for their being there, sending out tweets and saying stupid stuff and doing stupid stuff. Do you get what I mean? I mean,
yeah, it's kind of what I was leaning toward when I said it's great in theory.
Yeah, and the thing about coal in Germany, I get that, but you got to remember, the end of World War II was in 1945, okay? Germany only kicked its coal habit in more recent history, but we skip a step there because in order for Germany to become what it has become, and I would say by most measurements, they outperform the United States in any, using any metric that you care to mention, okay? No place is perfect, but they're doing a pretty good job given the world today. But in order for them to rise, they have to fall. And this is not against anybody in Appalachia, but if we look at degradation of life and surroundings on a scale, I have not spent a lot of time in West Virginia, though I have spent some time. I kind of wonder, have we fallen far enough in the sense that Germany literally was on its knees, it was on its back. And yeah, there are instances of people being on their knees and on their backs in all parts of this country, but we haven't, it's like in AA, they talk about hitting bottom. What we consider to be hitting bottom is not really hitting bottom, because hitting bottom, in the way I'm speaking of it, it's like there are no options other than to take the most logical one, which is what we should have been doing all along.
That's exactly right.
Well, let me, I'm sorry, Larry. I would just like to point out a couple of things. One, Germany has not stopped burning coal. Okay? When I was there 5 years ago, I was taken to a giant open cast pit mine where they were mining, basically carboniferous mud. And they were burning it in a coal-fired power plant that you could see in the distance, probably 30 miles away. And they were building a rail line from this pit to that coal-fired power plant. They're not done burning coal. The other part of it is to the extent that they reduced their dependence on coal, they did it largely with nuclear power. And that's, you know, and after Fukushima, that was the big deal. Just, we're not going to do that anymore. And guess what? Coal consumption went back up. Okay, just to throw a couple more things out there, because this is important in the relative terms of, say, the AIC Act that I was talking about. The largest importer of mountaintop removal coal, last I checked, in Europe, is the Netherlands. Okay, so I've commented numerous times on the on the fact that, you know, there's a lot of disinformation out there. Oh, coal is over, coal is done. Here, let's all pat each other on the back. Look, we won. Three cheers and a tiger for us. I can take you places right now where you will see stockpiles of coal that are little miniature mountains. And there are rail cars full of the shit leaving here every day. And the trucks are still on the roads. The thing is, this dovetails back or loops back around into the conversation and the topic Snork was touching. What they've done is they haven't eliminated mining, they haven't eliminated mountaintop removal, they've eliminated the need for human labor. Where 100 years ago, it took a crew of 125 people to run a single shift in a coal mine, it now takes 10. And as Arnold pointed out to me, we're on the way to automated heavy equipment, and eventually they'll find a way to get rid of those 10, and then it'll be pure profit.
Well, just to clarify, with Germany, what I was getting at wasn't that they're completely off coal, because it is, after all, a process, okay? And nuclear, okay, I get the dangers inherent in that. What I'm saying is, if you look at Germany in the last 20 or so years, the percentage of their energy needs being met through solar and to a lesser extent wind, let's say, for a country given the cloud cover a lot of the year, they're doing a hell of a job. Meanwhile, here in the United States, we've got vast stretches of this country that gets sunlight, you know, virtually all but maybe a month a year, a month spread out over the year, okay? How is it that we fail to recognize the possibility that exists of utilizing what solar power we can in a meaningful way? And I say it goes back to the fact that the people making the choices don't want things to work. They have a vested interest in them not working. That's what I was really getting at.
Yeah, Rex Tillerson, black gold courtesy phone, Rex Tillerson. I mean, it's an absolute fact. There's a patch of ground I remember reading about over the years. There's a patch of ground in Nevada that has enough solar energy striking it in a day to power the entire United States. The same thing goes for wind in North Dakota. But what we don't have is the technological drive. I mean, I'm sure Snort can tell us that there are some people working on it, but we're not working on it with the urgency that it deserves to figure out how to gather that energy, store it, and transmit it over vast distances. In other words, what used to be referred to as grid 2.0. And the reason we don't have it is because the hydrocarbon complex has a death grip on government. I mean, remember the hissy over Solyndra? Well, goddamn, that Kenyan Muslim usurper done give all our money to Solyndra, and they failed, and they went out of business, and that means the sun don't really provide energy, nor the wind neither, and we just need to drill, baby, drill. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
A couple of notes coming in.
And it becomes even more incumbent to change our ways, given that for the last week, we've been under the so-called leadership of someone who not only doesn't deal in reality, but deals in something that is so far removed from any reality that would actually help us that, I mean, it's frightening. It's dystopian in its ramifications.
Right, and see, we're in our little bubble here. I think that our little Horn Family Community Congregation has a real handle on just how much trouble we're in. But we are a bubble. And the fact of the matter is there's a whole lot of America out there. And look, I'm not talking about the Trumpanzees. I'm talking about the, 48% of this country that couldn't be bothered to bestir themselves to go and cast a ballot. Okay? And they think, oh, ho-hum, yeah, okay, people don't like Trump. Oh, those stupid women, they went and they had a hissy. They had a million-woman hissy. But everything's going to be okay. I mean, governments change. We get a new president every 4 years or 8 years or whatever. I mean, this is no different. Nothing. Well, it is. And we are in a far graver amount of danger than I would suspect. Look, I'll go so far as to say we are in more danger right now than we were at any point during the Second World War, and far too few Americans even suspect it, let alone know it. I mean, I'm sorry, Larry. I'm going to shut up a minute and let you talk. You can't even get the sparkle ponies to acknowledge that Russia is not our dear best friend. Jesus, jumping Christ, you know? Go ahead, Larry. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. You know, I learned something here. And, you know, that I feel just as Scott does, Scott Marinoff, feels about the country, and if we haven't hit bottom yet, we're hitting bottom fast, and I don't know what it's going to take, because I have not only have I objectively seen what's going on in the in you know
on the planet and in this country, but it's also affecting me subjectively. It's affecting my emotional and psychological state more than I normally am affected. And you all know that I suffer from depression and I suffer from a lot of anxiety and insecurity. And it's, and I don't know how how we're going to be able to withstand. I don't know if you heard Bob Nicole Sandler's rant on Tuesday when she did her show and how she got really, really angry. And but she certainly did. I was it was suggested by Joe and Pam Pam that I in fact listen to that. I'm very happy that she got upset. What we need now is we need to have some really good analysis about what we need to do economically and what we need to do economically to turn things around, because we, you know, incremental change, while that may seem to be the wisest way to deal with problems, given the fact that we've got such an overwhelming, dare I say, ideological adversary on the other side, doing incremental change isn't going to work. It really is not going to work. It may be the most mature and the wisest way to go to keep ourselves from having, you know, an even stronger backlash from our ideological and economic adversaries, but it's not really going to work. It really is not.
No, and Larry, you know, one of the big objections among progressives, and I shared it, okay? I wasn't a hilarian at the beginning. I just voted for the woman to try to keep Trump out of the White House, and, well, you know, I failed. But, you know, her incrementalism, well, you know, we'll do a little bit, you know, a little bit at a time, you know, slow and steady wins the race. It was to me a failure of vision and a failure to acknowledge the gravity of the threat that we faced. And that was even before Trump became president. I mean, I've got a note here from Steve in China. Brick by invisible brick. Of course, a massive infrastructure revitalization program is the answer for quite a stretch of the future, too. And we all know why that isn't going to happen, though perhaps in a piecemeal subsistence wage, private capital sort of scheme. Because real jobs and real wages, along with housing and public transportation, just aren't popular in America anymore. Popular in some twisted variant of political noisemaking, yes, but just not popular in terms of actually doing anything. Like rebuilding an entire nation, in addition to the physical accoutrement. American militarized capitalism, though, makes its profit in deteriorated infrastructure and dead bodies, and in continuously dismantled healthcare systems, by the way.
Yes, in addition, there were radical political economists that were one or two that I know from my community college here in Oakland, that back in 1980 knew that supply side economics was a bunch of nonsense and knew that it wasn't going to work and couldn't figure out why people would fall for it. But yet we've fallen for it for the last 35 years, and nobody's and the Democratic Party, as much as I don't want to, you know, they were incrementalists. They were trying to, you know, they were trying to be incrementalists and didn't want to really rock the Republicans' boat, so to speak. And as the country moved further and further toward conservatism and toward Republicanism, the Democratic Party didn't want to oppose the Republicans, because I guess they didn't want to start a war. But that's you know, I mean if the country had done some of this stuff and had fought back more, you know, more and more as time, you know, had gone on, and I'm not blaming anybody here because I know everybody here fought. But, you know, what I'm saying is that it's like we need a new the strategy of the conservative Democrats, whether it be the DLC or the group of people, Sam Nunn, and the other group of people that took over in the wake of McGovern's defeat, moving the party more conservatively so that they could possibly win. And they started to become a fundraising machine under Tony Colello. They moderated themselves or attenuated themselves to conservatism.
Well, that's pretty well said across the board. And I would suggest, Larry, that a part of it is because, well, for instance, the Trumpanzees are talking about, oh, we're going to fix the American infrastructure. But their only goal in fixing the American infrastructure, okay, jobs, jobs, jobs. But they're going to be shitty jobs. They're not going to be good jobs, okay? And moreover, revitalizing the American infrastructure is not seen as a means of lifting the country up, but rather as a you know, just another scheme by which we further enrich the 1%.
You're talking about the private-public partnerships and the things where you know, oh, we'll do some spending, but we want private industry to chip in.
Well, yeah, and look at the, I mean, there's a plan out there. I forget who wrote it. It had to do with Katrina, and it will be implemented in any infrastructure improvement. And the first thing they wanted to do was, and I'm pretty sure you know what this is, and most people do, first thing they wanted to do as part of it is get rid of Davis-Bacon. So that people aren't paid a fair living, decent wage in order to do the necessary rebuilding that must be done. And we'll do it on the cheap, but here's the fun part. We might attack the workers' wages, but the contractors who do it are still going to get just as rich, and they're going to charge just as much money. They're just going to pocket more of it.
That's exactly right. Or at least that's what I see happening.
And a lot of this, Larry, a lot of this is because capitalism. Because that's how capitalism works. You know, government exists as a handmaiden to profit acquisition.
Yes. And, you know, Scott may help me with this. I was reading that a lot of the food stamp programs were instituted to help people be able to get food if they were poor, but basically they were actually subsidies to help the agricultural business, the agriculture industry. They were said to be, you know, help people who didn't have enough money for food, but, you know, and they did that, but they basically had the net effect of helping the large agribusiness.
Right. They helped farmers. Okay. They helped maintain price supports for commodities goods when they fluctuated by virtue of oversaturation in the market and what have you. And that's why we went from straight up handing out bags of rice and beans and powdered milk and that wonderful cheese to food stamps. Because the retail grocers industry looked at it and said, hey, we want, you know, to steal a reference from The Godfather, hey, we want to get our beaks wet too. And so instead of providing food to people at cost, suddenly you've got poor people going to the grocery store and paying retail. And then the banking industry looked at the food stamps and said, we want to get our beaks wet too. So instead of food stamps, we wind up, you know, and food stamps were kind of a fake money. And so you wind up with these EBT cards, electronic benefits transfer cards, so that there's a massive amount of the actual money that's appropriated for feeding poor people that actually just goes to paying Citicorp to outsource to a call center in India to administer the card program. Again, because capitalism.
Yeah, and Max Kaiser yesterday was talking about the healthcare system. He and his wife, Stacey Herbert, on RT, said that they call the healthcare system, it isn't a healthcare system, it's a bank care system, because most of the profit that goes to the insurance companies goes to the banking industry.
Well, exactly. It's like Keith said last week. We don't have a health care system in this country. We have a wealth care system in this country. And
well, Bob,
and I know a little bit about this from personal experience. I know there's a lot of people with a lot worse situations than me. But, you know, because I'm leaving for D.C., I got to make sure I've got all my meds. Well, I just had to go and buy my meds today. And the grand total after all was said and done was somewhere around $175. And that's just to keep my triglycerides and my cholesterol from climbing a tree, my blood pressure from running through the roof, and my blood sugar from turning my blood into fucking maple syrup.
And well, Bob, make sure you have all that in the proper container too. Go ahead, friend.
Oh, damn straight.
And Bob, before you go to Washington, I've got one more treat for you, and I want you to take this. I want you to take this gift with you to D.C. and use it for all it's worth. It's another a cappella song for me, and I hope you like it.
Well, hold on, Laurel. I want to make, because we haven't heard from Charlie. We're running out of time here. Charlie?
Okay, I know the hour's getting late.
Yeah, Charlie, are you there? Charlie? No? Okay,
Well, I need to get to that. This out of my system before I burst.
Oh, there's Charlie.
Yeah. There you go, Charlie.
Pardon me?
Yeah, I said you've been awful quiet this evening.
Well, I hadn't had that much to say. I'm kind of in disagreement with the robotic situation. I watched the banks whenever they went over to check 21. I mean, that makes it a whole lot easier to pass fraudulent transactions and everything else. I mean, whenever you start putting your money.
It certainly begs for trouble, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, I know it will never happen, but I would like to see things go back to the 1960s where we traded with other countries, but tariffs, and they had tariffs, and, you know, we didn't have all this globalization and all. They did things their way, we did things our way, and we got along just fine. And all that's changed. The United States got its finger in everybody else's pie, and, you know, it's getting the people mad because, you know, look at what we've done to the Mexican farmers. I mean, the Mexican farmers used to produce crops and sell them. Now, whenever NAFTA came along, their jobs disappeared because the United States farmers, many countries around
the world. Well, we did a number on Mexico, Charlie, because you remember when the dim leader administration went all in on ethanol?
Yep.
Well, that made the corn market go crazy. And so suddenly you had farmers in Mexico plowing under agave fields to plant corn. And then the cost of corn that was used for subsistence purposes, you know, living, eating, went through the roof because there was more value in selling it for ethanol.
Right.
On the other hand, I don't think anybody, I don't know how simple Americans are anymore, Charlie, because do they not realize that 20%, that anywhere that, the mango Mussolini hangs a tariff, that tariff is going to be passed along to the consumer. He wants to hang 20% on Toyota. Well, that just means somebody wants to buy a Toyota is going to pay 20% more. It's not going to be on Toyota. Toyota's not going to just sit there and eat it. And a 20% bounce in the price of a gallon of gas. Who's up for that?
Most of the Toyotas sold in the United States today are produced in Georgetown, Kentucky.
A lot of them are, and Honda's in Ohio, and we build Toyota truck engines, I think, down in Putnam County, West Virginia. and there's Hyundai, you know, the orange dipstick is all worked up about, you know, a Ford plant in Mexico that, well, you get the idea.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I got a note from Matt in San Francisco. He's a subject line, "We're screwed. The majority of the cabinet picks are guys who have made money from bankruptcies and other schemes made up to move poor and middle-class money back up to the 1%. We are at a point where the pain has only started due to the inequity of wealth. It will now be on steroids, and many people are going to suffer and die. I'm horrified. 2 years ago, I sold a home in San Francisco, took the proceeds, and purchased a duplex. Now I rent the bottom floor out to cover my mortgage. I'm invested in another unit to rent out so that if another crash comes, I have real property that can generate revenue. I've changed the way I live in preparation for the dark times to come." And that's from Matt in San Francisco, who occasionally has to battle the urge to throw his phone. And I understand. And we are right. We're pretty much at the end of the program, everybody.
Are you ready? Are you ready, Bob?
Yeah.
I've got to get this off my chest. This is my going away gift for you. Okay. Are you willing to bear with me for a couple minutes?
Yeah.
Thanks. Here goes nothing. Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia, mountain mama. Take me home, country roads.
Thank you very kindly. Thank you. We're out of hey Laurel, we're out of time, buddy.
Sorry.
We're out of time.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I appreciate it, though. I really, really do. It is time for us to get out of here, though.
I don't think I can get those the whole
time. Yay, Rick! Just in time for us to get out of here. Your challenge, we're about 50, 60 bucks away from meeting Chris's challenge, and about $160 away from being done for the evening.
Okay, good. Glad to hear it.
So
I'll
hopefully
catch the podcast.
And enjoy the concert. Call me. And Sparky,
absolutely, Bob. I'll give you a report next Friday.
Thank you very well. No, you won't. I won't be here.
Oh, the Friday after.
Yeah, we're looking at two Fridays away. And with that, I need to ask Sparky: is the conversation going to continue post program?
Yeah, but somebody else is going to have to run it. I'm checking out.
Okay, that's cool. Well, so anybody that wants to participate, you're welcome to chime in, but someone else will be running it. So. I don't know who sends you the key to the bread. I don't know who sends you the breadcrumb trail. But thank you, Sparky. Thanks for a great week. I appreciate it. And thanks for another great Friday on the front porch. Thank you, one and all. Thanks to Billable Rick and Steve from Georgia Stan. Thanks to Larry for chiming in. Thank you, Charlie. Thanks, Scott and Punky. Thank you, Jules. Thank you, Snork. Thank you, Laurel. And like I said, thank you, Sparky. Thanks, Dave and Taliban Deanna for chiming in. Much appreciated. I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you to all of you who keep this little program going. Thank you so very, very much. Like I said, we got about 160 bucks to go, and hopefully that'll happen sooner rather than later. I'm out of here, and I'll be communicating as best I can over the course of the week. I don't know, Periscope, Facebook Live, Facebook, Twitter. I'll do the best I can. And hopefully you, in turn, will reach out and contact your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to please sign on as an original co-sponsor of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. Remember, you can tell them they've probably got a Dear Colleague letter in their somewhere in their inbox, and to go and look for it. Because, like I said, it's about the only pushback that we've got right now. And it is damn sure the only hope that Appalachia has right now. We got to stop poisoning and killing people before we can start talking about making this place better than what it is. So thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time sharing in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks for the laughs. Thanks for the participation, however you manifested. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Just keep, Gene, just breathe, breathe, brother. Just breathe. And don't let the French news tear you up too bad. Thank you, John Fox, for all the work you've done on the website, getting it back up and running. Thanks for getting the PayPal interface sorted. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and thanks always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great evening, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend, and have a great week. I'll be in touch. Good night.